All right, we are back this week with Super Toddies getting ready for Shabbos, and we have a handful of stories. I'm going to deviate a little bit from our agenda because I came across a couple extra lovely stories that I feel it necessary to share. There are three stories about V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha that I thought were all really, really important. The first one is like a tweet almost about Rav Boruch Bera Leibowitz, who was quoted to say as the following thing: when I go to the Shemayim and I'm going to be asked, well, why do you deserve to go to Gan Eden? He said, look, I don't know, but there's one thing that I do that I think is, you know, really, really meritorious. And that thing is, whenever I see a Jew, the first thing that comes to my mind is this person should be blessed, meaning they should have all these brachos. And that could be the zuchus, meaning to say that Rav Boruch Ber, who obviously was an extraordinary masmid, very, very deep, in his, you know, in his learning, he was always, you know, deep in a sugya and the Torah of his Rebbe, of V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha was so extraordinarily important for him. Similarly, the Chafetz Chaim, it's quoted, if you look in, Avas Chesed of his, he says that, just like we have, Kviyas Ithim L'Torah, we have storim in learning and everything else. He viewed it as important to make sure that you do chesed on a daily basis as something which was similar as a seder. I remember reading Rabbi Lau's biography when he said, you know, during yeshiva days and everything else, he recalls a hadracha. I'm not sure if it was in the name of Rav Lapian or not. But he felt like there was a good hanhaga tova to try to do chesed every day. And I believe he said that the one that he did was every time he would, wash netilas yadayim, he would fill the cup for the next person. And that's a very, very easy, hanhaga to be able to, do. So last one, of these, chesed stories came from, Rabbi Yaakov Bronfman, telling about Rav Shach. So apparently there was a young boy who was he was young and he was an orphan, maybe six years old, and he was always down in the dumps, and for good reason, obviously. You're a six-year-old without parents, like that's a very very tough life, and nothing seemed to cheer him up. Eventually, Rav Shach asked to meet with him, and he knew who Rav Shach was, and it was kind of hard to break the ice. So finally, when the boy came to him and they kind of warmed up a little bit, he said, hey, do you have a bike? And he said, yeah. He said, a new bike or an old bike? He said, it's a new bike. What color? He said, a red bike. What? A red new bike? That sounds amazing. Do you mind if I give it a spin? I'm sure he didn't use that lashon. But you mind if I take it for a spin? And the boy said, no, you can go ahead, besimcha. And Rav Shach took, you know, who's 92 years old at the time, took a ride on this little boy's bike. And apparently there was a picture that child had to today that obviously it helped warm him up and give him some chizuk, which is, you know, extraordinary for obvious reasons. One more about Rav Baruch Ber is that there was a Yesoma getting married. At her chasna, she was extraordinarily down. Rav Baruch Ber tried to cheer her up by dancing in front of her, and it didn't seem to work, so he jumped on a table. That didn't seem to work either, so he decided to do kind of what it says is strange movements, you know, meaning much more silly and out of character than the normal Godel Ador kind of behavior, and that finally got her to crack a smile and be happy. So I thought that was a really special story, and there are a few good ones for V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. I'm going to skip the story about the Groz costly chidushim and maybe save it for next week. But I thought that this was about Rabbi Yeruchim Lvovitz on Kant. I can't pass up this story. I read that Rabbi Yeruchim met with somebody who was quote unquote enlightened, maybe a professor of some sort. And, you know, they were talking about Machshava, and the professor looked at him and said, look, Immanuel Kant is like a world-renowned scholar. why don't you, you know, read him? He said, well, I know he, you know, what he's saying is worthless. He said, well, you've got this categorical imperative. You've got all that. Like, it's really, how do you know it's worthless? Meaning it's awfully popular. And he said, I know exactly how I know how it's worthless is because look at the results of his work. What kind, and there are many people who have read Kant's work and become the cruelest, most terrible, most miserable, morally reprehensive, people on planet Earth. If this is what comes of his work, I can tell ipso facto, as a matter of fact, it can't be MS and it can't be worth anything. So I thought of when that story, came across my desk, I thought to myself, you know, this argument is in some ways, applicable for all these universities, which are claiming to be bastions of enlightenment, where people are trying their very, very best to, to be an intellectual center. But if this intellectual center and all of their dialogue and all of their reading and all of their libraries and everything else, develops, say not supports, but develops the behaviors that we've seen very recently, one must question what is the value of their curriculum. So, there's more to say, but you can say that, to your families. I believe let's move on to Divriteria because, I the story about the masculine Volusian is great and it will have to come for another time. So, we talked a little bit about V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha and, the word, you know, loving your friend as yourself is a wonderful injunction. And the words of the Mesilas Yesharim, you know, where he says, kamocha mamish, it's really like yourself. Well, that's a very interesting position to take. And I wanted to, you know, expound upon it because what happens with the question of somebody who does not love themselves? Notwithstanding the fact that, for example, the Paleoates, has a whole erech, in his dictionary about, or his encyclopedia more accurately, about self-love and how self-love is mandatory. Notwithstanding that, like, what do we do if somebody doesn't really particularly like themselves so much? And I think that, you know, we see a little bit of that, in this door, that there are a lot of people who are, at very low, you know, they're counting their friends and putting forth images, but they have low senses of esteem. So the way that, the altar I saw in the Orat Sofun, the altar Slobodka addresses it is that you have a chiv and a chanami, you need to do it. And that's, it's a klal gadol b'Torah, and you need to figure out what that means. We mentioned before, and Jeremy and I were talking about this, this Bira Gra just today, that Hillel went to go to a bathhouse and he said, I'm going to go do a mitzvah. And the mitzvah, you know, mitzvah is chesed to myself, is gomel lenafsho ish chesed. So, there are instances where self-care and self-love are absolutely necessary. You need to be machshiv yourself to the extent that that is part of your avodas Hashem. You too deserve it, just like every other Jew. There is a machlokes brought in the Yerushalmi that Rashi only quotes half of. V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, he quotes Rabbi Akiva's Deya, where he says that Rabbi Akiva says V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha zeklal gadol b'Torah. The really overarching principle of the Torah is loving your neighbor like yourself. However, the Bar Plukta is Ben Azai. Ben Azai says that is not the most kolel one, but what is? It is Zeh Sefer Toldos HaAdam. This is like the, you know, the generations of man and mankind. And the Smak explains there that the pitfall that I had just described of a person who could potentially not love themselves is real, and therefore Ben Azai believes that it's actually broader, meaning there could be an instance where a person loves themselves a ton less, so they don't have to love their friend. That's according to the day of Rabbi Akiva. But Ben Azai says the motivation is not self-love here. The motivation is Tzelem Elokim. Tzelem Elokim means Zeh Sefer Toldos HaAdam, man is made. Remember Adam Rishon, Betzalel Elokim Boro. So he said, man is made in the image of God. And since man is made in the image of God, we must love our neighbors, our friends, and ourselves. That's the smack. Obviously, very fertile for a conversation with your families. Next, disgusting chazir. This is one I remember from high school. I had a Rebbe of Daniel Estreicher who very memorably would describe this Rashi toward the end of the Sidra as follows. And I hope you'll be mochel me if I quote it in such a, you know, such a kind of a funny way. But the way that he said it, and this is what he said indeed, was the Rashi says, I'm going to separate you from the nations to be for me. And he says, okay, if you're separating, that's wonderful. Says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, what does it mean? Where do you know that a person shouldn't say, this is quoting a Sifra, I'm disgusted by Chazir, I'm disgusted by Kilayim, but rather you say, oh, this looks delicious, but what can I do? A Kadosh Baruch Hu is gozer on me. It says, oh, what does it mean? It's from this drasha. It says, Shetehe havdalaschem, your separation, mayhem lishmi, is for me. Borish min aveira, separate from the aveira, umakabel alav omachuz shamayim, accept my kingship. And Rabbi Estreicher, I believe the way that he said it was, don't say icky piggy wiggy, say yummy tummy piggy wiggy, but I don't eat it because it's not kosher, because Kadosh Baruch Hu told me. And that obviously was very memorable because I am many years away from high school, and that has stuck with me. The question is, what does this apply to? Meaning, are we supposed to take, you know, the principles of Musar would tell us to feel disgusted by Avirus. So what descriptions is he applying here? So Rashi says this is what his examples are chukim. So the first approach is this is talking about chukim, laws which are unintuitive. And the Rambam says, Elazar ben Azariah is talking about chukim, matters that one would not have intuited in those instances. But you have to say your obedience is not because of your natural feelings, but with mishpatim, which are intuitive, you don't need to make such an argument. Instead, one should feel like it's wrong and evil and bad and full of the sitra achra and everything else. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter also says that following chukim does involve the Musar concept of growth that we're trying to develop in our devotion to Hashem's laws. So the second approach is from Rabbi Yochum Levavitz, and he says that Rashi does not require an unemotional approach to any mitzvah. Instead, one's motivation must be due to, meaning you should be disgusted by all of these things, but that shouldn't be the motivation. The motivation should be, I do tzivui Hashem. But then Rabbi Yerucham says all these stories that he said, like, when he smelled people, you know, cooking chazir or other things, you know, he was, like, absolutely disgusting to the point that he had an upset stomach. So that it's a very compelling. You could push that question a little further and say the Rambam's making a difference between chukim and mishpatim, which one should get more reward. I'm going to say one more Dvar Torah, and then if we have one more minute, I'll tell you one more thinking question. Is the one of the last Mishnahs in this week's Pirkei Avos says that there are three things which take a person out of the world, and one is sinas habrius. Rabbi Yechiel Michal Miminsk in Lezecher Yisrael, one of the Talmidei Agra, his parish says there's two kinds of sinas abrius. One is, I hate this guy, I can't deal with him, I don't want to do anything good for him. And, you know, that sort of attitude and approach towards that person, meaning actually hating people. And the other one is a non-existent social appetite. And the reason why is when it says Mutzina sa'adam mina olam, takes a person out of the world, meaning you become completely irrelevant. I think that for many of the super tatis in this group, I think that we've probably all experienced a downturn in some of our social appetite from maybe the tikufa of our 20s, certainly, and maybe even from our 30s to some of us who are touching the 40s. It might be, you know, slightly different. I think that it's a very interesting thing is to say, if we don't like people the same way that we used to, how does that affect our relevance? Last thing, what is the, we learned, Su'uru, says, go out and see, what is the Derech Yeshara, the way that people should live their lives. And we have the five Talmidim who are giving different approaches and everything. And Rav Chaim Volozhiner makes a extraordinarily powerful comment. He says, why does it start with Tzururu, go out and see? He says, this is not a conversation you should have in a base medrash. So the question I would pose to you is, what does this tell us about what conversation should be had in a base medrash, and how do we balance what we hope is a sense of love and familiarity, that this is our home away from home, but on the other hand, the appreciation of the singularity of our goals in that home away from home. Thanks, everybody, for learning, and Bezras Hashem, we'll pick up next week.